We're holding on Profaula from the Bays, their fourth line from the end of the medium size lines. The line begins Bay. We learned in the Mishnah that the king has a mitzvah not to have too many horses, and we discussed the details of that yesterday. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Rami. Rabbi Yehuda pointed out a seeming contradiction between Ksukim. Ksiv, one pasuk says, Vayhi l'shloimah aborim elef uvay susim l'merkavdoi. One pasuk says that Shloimah had 40,000 stables for his, 40,000 stable foals of horses for his chariot, says in Malachim. Uchtiv, but then you have a different pasuk, Vayhi l'shloimah abas aloh from uvois uyois, it says in the pasuk susim. Then another pasuk in Divrei Yomim says that he had 4,000 stables of horses. So was it 44,000 or 40,000? Either way, Marsha points out, he obviously was over on what we learned yesterday about not having too many horses, because there's no question some of those horses were bottled, some of them were just there in the stables and not being used, which we said is also for a king to do. We're going to talk about in a minute how Shlomo could do such a thing. Anyway, so was it 4,000 or 40,000? Okay, son, so what does it mean? It's both. If it was 40,000 stables, it's tabloys is similar to the word stables in English. Then each one had within it 4,000 stalls for the horses. In a stable, you have the building, a stable, and then in it, you have individual stalls for the horses. So the pasuk may mean that there were 40,000 such buildings, and each one of them had 4,000 stalls in it. The imdalar alof mitzdabloys tell you, or if it was 4,000 buildings, stables, kolachad rechad hoyu by a boim elof uvis susim, then each one had in it 40,000 souls. So either way, it's 4,000 times, either way, both figures are true. It's 40,000 times 4,000, which would be, meaning in other words, he would have had, over 16 million horses, but, how they were distributed among the stables, there's two, based on the psukim, there are two possible ways of understanding it. So one way or the other, yeah, one way or the other, he had 160 million horses. So the Gemara continues. Rabbi Yitzchok Rami, Rabbi Yitzchok pointed out, here's another seeming contradiction in the Pesukim about Shloimeh's times. Siv ein kesef nechshe b'mei Shloimeh l'ma'uma. One pasuk says that silver was not counted for anything in Shloimeh's times. The pesukim describe over there how everything, all the kalim in his in his palace and in the Bais Mikdash and all were made out of gold. And nothing out of silver, because silver was considered worthless at that time. Uchtiv, but another pasuk says, Vayitin Shloimeh as a kesef Yerushalayim ka'avonim. Another pasuk says that Shloimeh made silver in Yerushalayim as common as stones. Now, as common as stones means that it doesn't have very much value, but it has something. Stones are not completely worthless. So what was it? And the answer is, like Kasha, kan kodim shenosa Shloimeh as bas parei, kan la'acha shenosa Shloimeh as bas parei. One is before Shloimeh married bas parei, and the other is after. Before he married bas parei, he was completely occupied with the wisdom of Torah, and Marashah points out, since the Pasuk says, the Pasuk in Mishlei, which Shloimeh himself wrote, mentions, says that Torah is even more important than silver, then that means silver at that point was worthless. But afterwards, when he married bas parei, they weren't quite as rich as they were before, and then silver had some value, even though still not very much. Another thing that happened, another difference after Shloimeh married Bas Parei, and by the way, you know, I mean, the Rambam stresses strongly the point that he was Megayer her, but nevertheless, it was still a problem because she was not necessarily, was she Megayer L'Shem Shemayim. We see that some of his wives, maybe including her, afterwards relapsed to their old ways and were worshiping Avodah Zarah, and Shloimeh didn't prevent them, and Shloimeh is held responsible for that, and ultimately that caused the breakup of his kingdom. With Bas Parei herself, there's a whole medrash that tells about how she played Avodah Zarah music at his wedding and got him to oversleep and then caused the Avodah and the Bais Mikdash to be late. So basically she was a bad influence on him. So therefore after he married her, then certain things changed. And the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yitzchak, B'shor Shenosa Shloimeh as Bas Parei, when Shloimeh married Bas Parei, Yored Gavriel, the North Konabayam, Gavriel came down and stuck a stick into the sea, the hell of Shirtan, and eventually dirt and rocks and everything collected around it, And eventually the great city of Rome was built on that area, on that landfill that had collected around that stick. So in other words, the point of the Gemara is that when Shlomo married Bas Para, and that was the first stage in the deterioration of the Jewish people in that time, then that gave power that now Rome could start coming to into existence, which eventually destroyed the Bais Mikdash. So in other words, as we Jews are stronger in Torah Avodah, then it takes away power from the Goyim and vice versa. Elsewhere, by the way, the Gemara mentions, you know, the Yerushalmi mentions other stages in it as well. When Yerovam set up the Eglei HaZahav, then that was when the two brothers, Remus and Romulus, who were the founders of Rome, came and built the first two huts over there. And then the Yerushalmi continues when Eliyahu went up to Shemayim, and that was, like, up until that point, there was still a chance to save the Aseres HaShvatim. After that, not so much. Then that was when the Romans appointed their first king. So we see that their state, even though at the time it was still tiny and unimportant, it was growing in power as things were deteriorating beruchnius among the Jewish people. Why did Hashem not reveal the reasons for the mitzvahs in the Torah? Most mitzvahs, it doesn't say, do this because such and such. So why is that? Because we see there are two mitzvahs where the Torah does say a reason, and the great person in the world, Shlomo HaMelech, stumbled on them and thought that since the reasons don't apply, then the mitzvahs don't apply. The pasuk says you shouldn't have too many wives, and as we learned yesterday, is a maximum of 18. And Shlomo figured to himself, because I'm the Chacham Mikol Adam, he figured I'm going to be able to have extra wives, and I won't turn away from Hashem. And it turned out to be not so. Later on, the pasuk actually describes Shlomo himself worshiping Avodah Zarah. Now, the Gemara explains in Shabbos he didn't actually worship Avodah Zarah; his wives did, and he didn't protest. Nevertheless, though, it still distracted him to some extent from being completely focused on Hashem. And even if not, he was still over on the Isser. And similarly, the pasuk says, when Shlomo got old, his wives inclined his heart away from Hashem. So that was one. Then you have the pasuk says, lo yav v'lo susim, the king should not have too many horses. Now Shlomo figured, the pasuk says, why should he not have too many horses? Because he's going to cause Jews to return to Egypt, which in those times, Egypt was the world center for breeding horses. So Shlomo figured, it's fine. The pasuk says, only don't do it so you don't return the people to Mitzrayim. I won't. I won't cause people to return to Egypt. We'll arrange all the breeding and the sale of horses here and there. But then the pasuk says, eventually they had that, yeah, there were Jews going to Mitzrayim to deal with the horses, and a chariot comes out of there worth 600 shekel. Each horse was selling for 150 individually. So we see that Vatalet came out of Mitzrayim, meaning that Shlomo had agents actually in Mitzrayim arranging for the buying of the horses, which shows that he was eventually that cause that the Isser was violated, so that Jews shouldn't live in Mitzrayim. So we see, therefore, that in those two cases, he ended up violating the mitzvah, thinking that it doesn't apply, and in fact, it does apply. A Medrash mentions on it, by the way, that when he did this, one of the letters, the Yud of Layarbe, flew up to Shemayim, flew up to Hashem to complain, Hayitochen, Shlomo is causing me to be removed from the Torah, in effect, because he's ignoring me. And Hashem says, don't you worry, Shlomo is going to be long gone, and you'll still be part of the Torah. The Torah is never changeable. So tackle why were the reasons given for these two. Marsha explains, because the two things themselves are mitzvahs. Because after all, that he shouldn't turn away from Hashem itself is a mitzvah, and that he shouldn't cause Jews to live in Mitzrayim is itself a mitzvah. So therefore, Hashem did reveal the reasons for those, unlike most other mitzvahs, where the reason behind it is not in and of itself a mitzvah. Later, Mefarshim Margolius Hayam points out that, there are occasionally other mitzvahs where the Torah says a reason for it. The Torah says, sit in a sukkah, l'man yedu dirtis seichem, for example, and there's a couple of other examples like that. But fine, there the reason is not going to impinge on the mitzvah. It's a reason in the past, in order that you should know that we sat in sukkahs during the years in the desert. So knowing that reason reason is not going to say, well, then the new reason doesn't apply to me, because the fact is, it's a historical fact. But here we were saying, in order that he shouldn't cause such and such, then Shlomo thought it doesn't apply to him, and unfortunately he was wrong in that. The Gemara continued. Okay. So the Mishnah had continued, Bekosev Sefer Torah L'Shmoy. The Mishnah had said that one of the rules about a king, he has to write a Sefer Torah for his own name. And we said in the Mishnah that Sefer Torah always accompanies him wherever he goes. So Tana over Vanshalo Yisnoa B'Shalavoysev. So Braisa says he can't just beautify himself with the Sefer Torah from his ancestors, meaning, in other words, he may have Yaushin a Sefer Torah from his ancestors, from the previous kings. Nevertheless, he still has to have a Sefer Torah of his own. And the Gemara continues. So the Gemara says, Omar Rava, Rabba, it says on the side. So Rava, Rabba says in general, Afa Pishi, Nicholai Avos, Adam, Sefer Torah, even though a person's ancestors left him a Sefer Torah, Mitzvah Lichtav Mishaloi, he still has a mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah of his own. Nowadays, by the way, the poskim talk about, does that mitzvah apply to the same way it did now? I mean, nowadays we don't learn directly from a Sefer Torah. So there are poskim who say that maybe the primary mitzvah is that a person should have other svarim of his own, and some go even further and say the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah may not even apply nowadays. Nevertheless, the Rebbe still started the campaign to have a letter in the Sefer Torah to at least be mekayim it that way, but there are rishonim who hold that it's not even necessary. But anyway, But in those times where they learned from a Sefer Torah, then that was the mitzvah to do it that way. Shenema, because the pasuk says va'ata kisvu lachem es hashira. The pasuk says now write for yourselves this song. So it means the song of Hazinu. But the Rambam explains, since you can't write sections of the Sefer Torah by itself, so therefore it means you have to write the whole Sefer Torah, which includes that shira. Sabaya asks on Rava or Rabba. We just learned because of the Sefer Torah l'Shmoy, we said that the king has to write for himself a Sefer Torah, Shalei Yisnoa b'Shal Acherim, meaning that he can't just glorify himself with the one that was written by others, by his ancestors or whatever, implying Melech Ein Hed Yitloy, implying only a king has to have a new Sefer Torah of his own. A regular person does not. And the answer is no. Leitzricha l'shtei Torahs. No. What it means is that when the Braisa says that the king is different than a regular person, means as far as two Sefer Torahs. A regular person is yotzei the mitzvah if he has one Sefer Torah of his own. You have details in it. The Gemara mentions elsewhere a person, for example, if he did yaushin or buy a Sefer Torah and he corrected something in it where there was a mistake, then that's also considered as though he wrote the Sefer Torah, because without it would be possible, etc. But the point is, a regular person is yotzei by owning or writing or whatever, one Sefer Torah. A king has to have two. So Bederach Klal, he would yaushin one from his ancestors, and then he'd commission one for himself. But if he doesn't, then he has to have two. V'chidetanya, as in fact we learn in the Braisa. The Pasuk says he should write for himself the Mishnah Torah Azos, it's a copy of the Torah. That means Kosev L'Shmoy Shtei Torahs. That means he has to have written for his purpose two Sefer Torahs. Achas She Yotzev Nechneses Imoy, one goes in and out with him, meaning it goes with him wherever he goes, as we learned in the Mishnah. V'achas Shemunachas LeBeveis Gnozov, and the other one that he keeps at his treasury. The one that goes in and out with him, the one that accompanies him wherever he goes. How does he do that? The Sefer Torah is a little big to carry around all over the place. So how does he do that? He makes it like a kameya, like a little amulet at a miniature size, and he hangs it from his arm. As the pasuk says, I placed Hashem before me constantly because he's at my right hand, and therefore I won't stumble. So we see, in other words, that there's an inyan that he has the Hashem represented by the Sefer Torah on his right hand constantly. This is in parenthesis because the Gemara is going to bring this later and discuss it later, so maybe it's not part of this original Braisa. Anyway, the Braisa says, by the way, deal with the question. I mean, physically, how is it possible to write a Sefer Torah so small that he'd be able to carry it everywhere he goes? And there are Mephoshim who explain that maybe, in fact, a Sefer Torah for this purpose, maybe it doesn't mean the full Torah, maybe it means a list of the Aseret, and maybe it means a writing of the Aseret Adibris, or a listing of the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. In some contexts, we find that such a thing is called a Torah. Anyway, the Braisa continues. Einan nichnas v'loy lebeis hamelchot v'loy lebeis hakise. He does not go, now we said it accompanies him constantly, but he doesn't go with it into the bathhouse or into the or into the bathroom, because you can't have a sefer Torah in such a place. Shenema v'hoise imay v'kara boy, because the pasuk says it should be with him and he should read it, which means makom aroy likris boy. It applies only in a place where it's suitable to read from it. So when he goes to such places, then he takes it off and then he puts it back on afterwards when he gets out. Okay. Now we said that the words mishnah Torah zos mean a second sefer Torah. So now the Gemara brings that there's another explanation, another meaning of that word Mishneh Torah. We have to realize the word Mishnah can have two different derivations, two different shoshim. It can come from the word Sheni, which means the second one, or Shnei, which means therefore two sacred Torah, or it can also come from the Torah Shana, which means to change. So now the Gemara is going to douse on that Mishneh Torah can mean the changed Torah. Now what does that mean? The Torah is never changeable, Chas v'Shalom. So we're going to see. Originally, the Torah was given to the Jewish people in Ksav Ivri and Loshon Kodesh. Loshon Kodesh, we know what that is. Ksav Ivri, the Gemara is going to identify it soon by another name, is the ancient script that they used to use in the times of the first. They found it in various inscriptions and letters and whatnot from the time of the first Beis Mikdash. It's found on coins from the second Beis Mikdash. As the Gemara is going to go on to say, the Kusim still use a form of it, Adayim Azeh. It's a Hebrew alphabet, but it looks a lot different than the one that we use nowadays, which is called Ksav Ashuri. If you search up ancient Hebrew alphabet or whatever, you'll find many examples of it. Anyway, it's the letters of it. So you have 22 letters in it, just like the 22 letters in our Aleph Beis. But the forms of the letters are much different. Some of them are recognizable as descending ones, as being related one to the other. Some of them are more difficult to see the connection. But anyway, so Ma'zutra or Ma'ukva is saying that that originally the Torah was given in that script and in Lashon Kodesh. Then later on, the Torah was re-given to them in the times of Ezra, the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, in Ksav Ashuris and the Aramaic language. So the Torah from then on had to be written in Ksav Ashuri, but instead they were going to be learning it in Aramaic. The Jewish people chose for themselves, you know what, we'll start using the new script, the new or new old, we'll talk about soon, we'll use the script of Ksav Ashuri, but we're going to keep Lashon Kodesh. They left for the head Yotis, the commoners, you can continue to use Ksav Ivri and you can use Aramaic for your Sefer Torah if you want, but we're going to stick with Lashon Kodesh and we're going to rewrite it. We're going to write it from now on in Ksav Ashuri. Man had Yotis, who are these had Yotis? Amar of Chisa Kusoi, means the Kusim, the Kusim, otherwise known as the Shamronim. They're descendants of people who were brought to Eretz Yisrael by Sancheirev to repopulate it after the Aseret HaShvatim were taken into Golus. Ada Yemazeh, there are some of them living in Shechem and in some other places in Eretz Yisrael, and yet they continue to use the old Ksav Ivri, or a modified version of it, and their Sifrei Torah, such as they are written in a dialect of Lashon Kodesh that has a lot of Aramaic words in it. So that's what it means. My Ksav Ivris, what is the Ksav Ivris? I'm going to put the Ksav Libuna. It's a script called Libuna. So Rashi describes that it means oversized letters, and Rashi describes the kind that are written in Kameas and Mezuzas. You find in the writings of the Rishonim that there used to be a popular minhag to write in a mezuzah, to write along the sides of a mezuzah, to write various letters in a strange oversized script, almost like magical symbols. The Rambam very, very sharply condemns that. The Rambam says it's one thing to write on the back of a mezuzah, you have the letters over there that correspond to Hashem Elokeinu Hashem, Kuzu B'muchzes Kuzu, and Shakai on the outside of it, that's fine, at least it's on the outside, but absolutely the Rambam says don't be writing anything else inside the mezuzah, you're not making it into a kameya for protection. The mezuzah is a mitzvah of Hashem, and you don't tamper with it anyway. But you find in writings of the Rishonim that there used to be a popular minhag to write such things in mezuzahs, which are these strange, oversized markings and letters of different kinds. So Rashi says Ksav Lebunah means that. Tosfos just brings a different explanation that it means basically like negative writing, like you're putting ink on the paper and leaving spaces where the letters would be. But Tosfos argues that that's not considered writing at all. Then Tosfos says Libuna is the name of a place. Maharsha says that Libuna might be named after Lavan, because Lavan after Lavan Harami, so therefore it may be a script that came originally from Lavan's area of Aram Naharaim. Anyway, so that was the original script we're saying that the Torah was written in. And then later it was changed. So now, how could it be changed? What happened to our Torah? Is those like to Hey Mochlefes, and Nevi'im can't introduce new changes? So we'll talk about that as we go through the Sugya. But first, Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Roy, you want to know how great Ezra was? Roy, Hoya Ezra, should nothing Torah Yodai. You should know, Ezra would have been great enough that the Torah should have been given to the Jewish people through him. Ilmolin, like Kodmei Moshe, except for the fact that he was preceded by Moshe. He lived 900 years after Moshe, so the Torah had already been given. But if it hadn't been for that, he would have been the one. And how do we see that? But Moshe hu Omer, Moshe ola alalekim. It says that Moshe went up to Hashem. But Ezra hu Omer, hu Ezra ola mi Bavel. And by Ezra, it says he went up from Bavel. So the similarity in words teaches us, ma aliyah ha Omer kan Torah, just like when Moshe went up, it was to receive the Torah. The same way, when it says by Ezra that he went up, means that he was receiving the Torah and would have been giving it to the Jewish people. Another example, Moshe describes, he says, Hashem commanded me at that time by Matan Torah to teach you the Chukim and Mishpatim of the Torah. By Ezra, who Omer, ki Ezra, Hechem Lavavoi, and by Ezra, the Pasuk says, That Ezra had prepared his heart and focused himself lidrash his Torah Hashem alekav to darshan the Torah of Hashem velasis ulamid biyisrael chok and mishpat, and to do and to teach among the Jewish people chok and mishpat. So again, the similarity in wording means that Ezra is almost like a second Moshe Rabbeinu. The Afa Pishalei Nitna Torah al Yodai. Now, even though the Torah was not actually given through him because it had already been given before that, Nishtana al Yodai Aksav. He did have the schus, though, that the writing, that the script for which Sifrei Torah are written was changed through him. So there was a change that happened in his times, namely the adoption of a new script. Dichtiv, and we find that it was in his time, Dichtiv, as the Pasuk describes, so the context of the following Pasuk is going to be where the enemies of the Jewish people are writing letters to Kodesh and Achashverosh and Artachshasta to Masu on the Jews and get the building of the second Beis Mikdash stopped. And the expression in the Pasuk is Chsav HaNishtavon, the writing of the Nishtavon, Kosav HaRomis and Masurgam HaRomis, was written in Aramaic and translated into Aramaic. So we understand that, so first of all, Nishtavon, the simple meaning of Nishtavon means like a copy of the letter. But the Gemara is darshaning Nishtavon, Meloshin Shona, Meloshin, it was changed. So in his times, this was in Ezra's times, so the script was changed, and even as the Pasuk is describing over there, the enemies of the Jewish people are already starting to use that new script. Because as we just said, it was a little bit in flux then, who's going to be using the new script, and who's going to be using the old one, and eventually the Kusim decided to stick with the old one. But for the time being, the Kusim were also using this new script as well, and it's called Nishtavon in the sense that it was changed. And then you have a few years earlier than that, when you have the story of Daniel with the writing on the wall by Belshazzar's party, the expression is Loi Kalin Ksavit Lamikra, all of Belshazzar and all of his advisors couldn't read the writing on the wall, Ufishra Lahidal Malka, and to inform the king of the explanation of it. So now, why couldn't anybody read it? The reason is because it was written in a new script which nobody until then was familiar with. And you have the Pasuk by the king, by the Jewish king. The Chosav Leis Mishnah Torah Azois. The Pasuk says he should write for himself the Mishnah of this Torah, which means, we understand like this, before we said that Mishnah Torah means a second copy of the Torah. But now the Braisa is darshaning that it means Ksav HaRoy Leishtanis. It means a script which is eventually going to be changed. So we see, in other words, that there was a time in Jewish history when that script was changed. Now, so the big question is, how does something in Torah like that get changed? So in fact, the point is, according to this Manda Omer, because the Torah itself implies that eventually there's going to be a change. So in other words, the Torah itself, in the words, Mishnah Torah Azos, is hinting that right now you're using this script, but eventually that's going to change, and therefore that's not considered changing the Torah. The change was that they went from Ksav Ivri, also known as Ksav Libunah, to Ksav Ashuri. that they went from the ancient Hebrew script, which you can, you look on online, you look on Wikipedia or whatever, you can find examples of it, versus now they went to Ksav Ashuri. Loma Nikra Ashuris. Why is this script called Ashuris? Sha'ala, Imam Ashur, because it came up with them from Ashur. Ashur and Bavel are adjacent areas in Iraq nowadays. So when they came from Golas Bavel, then they brought that script with them. So now you have, in other words, so shortly before the end of that Golas, the Malach that had written on the wall over there in front of Belshazzar had written in this new script. That was a simon, Minashamayim. It wasn't just in order to terrify Belshazzar, it was also as a simon for the Jewish people. Eventually Daniel was brought in to interpret it, and he did, which means it was a simon that now a new script is going to start being used. And now when they left Babel and came to Eretz Yisrael, then they brought that script with them, and from then on that became the script they wrote Sifrei Torah in. From then on, by the way, the old script, Ksav Ivrit, became more like a mundane script, sort of like the handwriting script that we use nowadays. And in fact, the Rambam says that's why in the time of the Second Beis Mikdash, they used it on their coins. They didn't want to use Ksav Ashuri, because coins, after all, sometimes they're in the bathroom and other places like that. You don't want the holy Ksav Ashuri to be there. So therefore, they continued to use the old script on coins and other mundane things like that. Tanya, then we learn in a Braisa, Rebbe Omer, Rebbe says a little differently. This wasn't a new script. Originally, the Torah was given to the Jewish people in the script of Ksav Ashuri, as we have it nowadays. But when the Jewish people sinned in various times, then the script became for them royets. Royets literally means broken. So in other words, like they lost the ability to read it. In fact, there is the Yerushalmi actually calls Ksav Ivri, gives it another name, Ksav Royetz, a rat. So the Gemara may mean that it was transformed into Royetz. In other words, now they started using this Ksav Royetz instead. The Kibbutz Chozer Behen, when the Jewish people did Shuvah in the times of Ezra, Hechziru Lahem, that Hashem restored them the knowledge of that original ancient script of Ksav Ashuri. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Shuvu Levitzorin, return to the fortified place, to Yerushalayim, Asire Hatikva, you prisoners of hope. In other words, you've been prisoners in Golos and have been constantly hoping for the Geula and for the Beis Hamikdash to be rebuilt. Gam Hayoim, even today, Magid Mishnah, Oshiv Lach, I will restore to you the one who tells you the Mishnah. So in other words, you forgot Mishnah Torah Azos. You forgot, and the script of the Torah was changed. Now I'm going to restore the knowledge of that to you. And according to Rebbe, Loma Nikra Shema Ashuris. So then, why is the script called Ashuris if it didn't originate in Ashur? Shema Usheras Biksav, because it's written very, very clearly in writing. Unlike most other scripts, where some letters might resemble others, Ksav Ashuri, every letter is distinctly different than the other, as long as they're written correctly, and therefore there's no possibility of mixing up and misreading it. So far we have two opinions. One is that the Torah was actually given originally in Ksav Ivri, and then in Daniel and Ezra's times it was changed. The second is that originally it was given in Ksav Ashuri, and then in Ezra's times it was rediscovered, basically, this old Ksav. Then the Gemara brings a third opinion of Shimon Elazar Oimer, Mishum Rabbi Elazar Ben Parta, Sha'om Mishum Rabbi Elazar Amudori. No, Ksav Zela Nishtana Kol Iker. The script was never changed. They always wrote Sifrei Torah in Ksav Ashuri. Shenem of Vavei Ha'amudim. As the Pasuk says, the Pasuk describes in the Mishkan, the hooks of the pillars, from which you learn, Ma'amudim Lo Nishtanu, Af Vavim Lo Nishtanu. Just like the pillars didn't change, the pillars are always made in the same way, Af Vavim Lo Nishtanu, the same way the Vavim, the same way the hooks on them were never changed, and the word Vavim means they're shaped like the letter Vav. So we see, in other words, that the letter Vav and all the other letters of the Aleph Beis still continue to have the same shape as before. Whereas in Ksav Ivre, if you look for ancient examples of Ksav Ivre, the letter Vav looked more like a letter F, looked more like a backwards letter F or a letter Y. So we see that it wasn't. It looked the same as it was now, which where it resembles a hook. Rashi actually doesn't have the words ma vavim lanishtanu af vavim lanishtanu. Rashi says it just means, in other words, the very fact that the Torah called these hooks vavim means that they were shaped like a letter vav. Well, then the letter vav obviously had the same shape as we have it now, where it looks like a hook.
Was that that you have to buy into the letter Vav to mean that shape.
The fact that it's called the Vavei Hamudim means that there was
why is the calling?
Because the fact that the fact that the hook is called Vav means it was shaped like a letter Vav.
Well, you're saying, I'm sorry, I don't understand. You're saying that what's called a Vav has a shape.
Yeah. In other words, the fact that
you haven't known yet the shape.
The shape of a hook is not going to be like the shape of a letter Y or a letter F. It's going to be like the shape of a Vav, as we're familiar with it. That's the shape of a hook. So therefore, if the Torah calls them Vavei, then it means they have the same shape then as they do now. So again, according to Rashi, that's the proof. According to the Girsa we have in front of us, rather, the proof is that it's comparing them to the Amudim, and the Amudim never changed. They were still made in the same way. And you also have a Pasuk in the Megillah, that Mordechai wrote to the Jewish people in their script and in their language. Just like the language of the Jewish people didn't change, they still continued to speak and write Lashon Kodesh. The same way it says, Reb Shimon ben Elazar, the script never changed either. Elamani, at least for Divrei Kodesh. Reb Shimon ben Elazar may well agree that they use Ksav Ivri for Divrei Chol, like we see again. They have it on these various inscriptions from the first Beis Hamikdash and on coins from the second Beis Hamikdash. But he's saying, as far as Dvorim Shebekdusha, they always had their special script of Ksav Ashuri. Elamani Makayimus Mishnah Torah Azay. So what about the pasuk? It's Mishnah Torah, which implies, according to the other Chachamim, that the script was changed. Means the Shtei Torahs is, as we talked about, as far as the king having two Sifrei Torah, Achas Sheyotzes V'Nichneses Imo, one that goes and comes with him wherever he goes, VaAchas Shemunachas LeBeveis Gnozav, and the other one that's in his treasuries. Oisah Sheyotzes V'Nichneses Imo, so the one that goes in and out with him. As we said before, Osa Osa Kamin Kameya, he makes it little, he makes it miniature like a Kameya, Vitola Vizroya, and he hangs it from his arm, and he has it constantly with him. Shenema Shivisi Hashem Lanayim Summit, as we quoted the Pasuk before, I placed Hashem before me always, and the Pasuk continues, Kimi Mini Bal Emot, because he's at my right side, and therefore I'll never falter, I'll never stumble. So we see that the Torah is always on his right side, and that would mean, in other words, that he has to be, that that's actually hanging from his right arm constantly. As we talked about before, some before should say that maybe it was only a listing of the 613 mitzvahs or the Aseret HaDibros, which contain all the mitzvahs, because otherwise it might be physically impossible to write a Sefer Torah so small. Anyway, so we have three opinions. There's a vast amount of discussion among the Geonim and the Rishonim and the Achronim about our Gemara over here and about the different opinions. And so forth. There are a lot of very interesting opinions in it. First of all, when we say over here that according to Rebbe, when the Jewish people sinned, then they lost knowledge of Ksav Ashuri, there's an opinion, I think the Radvaz says this, that when they sin, doesn't mean like this we would say, it means at the end of the first Beis Hamikdash or something. No, it actually means already the Chet Eidl. There's an idea based on Yerushalmi and based on other sources that the first Luchas were written in Ksav Ashuri, and that already the second Luchas were written in Ksav Ivri. We know famously the Bavli tells us in a couple of places that the inside of the Mem and the Samach and the Luchas were hanging there, Vederach Nest, because a Shloss Mem and a Samach are completely surrounded, and the core of the letter would not be connected to the rest of the stone, so it was hanging there, Vederach Nest. Meanwhile, there's Yerushalmi that says that, there's Yerushalmi that mentions that according to the opinion that the Luchas were written in Ksav Ivre, then the same thing was true of the Ayin, because in Ksav Ivre, an Ayin is shaped like a triangle or like a circle, so the same kind of thing. So the Radvaz and different other Rishonim and Achronim talk about different possibilities, including that already the second Luchas were written in Ksav Ivri, and that according to that, the idea would be that, yes, the Torah was given, the first Luchas were in Ksav Ashuri, but then after that, Hashem had them, according to the first two opinions anyway, continue to write in Ksav Ivri, even their Sifrei Torahs. The Ksav Ashuri then would be something special that was only known to Yechidei Segula in each generation. So now, later on, when the Malach comes and writes it on the wall in front of Belshazzar, then neither he nor his advisors know what it's talking about, because they're not familiar with that Ksav, because it's only known to Yechidei Segula. So they call him Daniel, and he, being one of those Yechidei Segula, is able to interpret it, and then he realizes that this is also a Simon Min HaShemayim, that from now on we should be disseminating the knowledge of the script more widely, and start using it in our Sifrei Torah. So, as I said, there's a vast amount of discussion about the ins and outs of this, and about the whole historical development of it. So the Gemara continues, V'idach. Now, what are the other Chachamim who disagree and say that Mishnah Torah means that the script of the Torah was changed? How are they? Hi, Shivisi, my Dorishvei. So, what are they doing with this pasuk Shivisi Hashem the Negvi Summit, which implies that the king always had a Sefer Torah accompanying him wherever he went? And the answer is Miboyle the Chidrav Chana Bar Bizna. They use it to teach us what Rav Chana Bar Miboyle Chidrav Chana Bar Bizna. They use it to teach us what Rav Chana Bar Bizna says. The Amar Rav Chana Bar Bizna, Amar Rav Shimon Chasida. It doesn't refer specifically to the king. When a person davens, he has to picture himself as he has to see himself as though the Shechina is directly in front of him. As the pasuk says, I've placed Hashem before me always. So according to that mandama, that according to those opinions, then the word that pasuk is not telling us anything about the king and the Sefer Torah. It's more generally talking about a yid who's davening to the Eibishter, which is why you have in many shuls they have a whole plaque that says Shivisi Hashem the Nevi Summit on the stender for the chazan. What? Say what?
Or dalif
nimi atoim. Or dalif nimi atoim and different other things like that. Right. So that's another thing we can learn from that. And in fact, in Halacha, we have, for example, the reason why at the end of Shemini Esrei do we bow first to the left? When it comes to the end of Kaddish, for example, we bow first to the right. The Gemara explains elsewhere, because since you're standing in front of the Shechina, therefore you're bowing first to the Shechina's right, which is going to be your left. The Gemara says, Lulav Shimon de Amal Lonishtana. Now, according to Lulav Shimon, who says the script was never changed, Lulav Shimon de Amal Ksavza Lonishtana, my like calling Ksavza Mikre. Well, then why couldn't Belshazzar and his advisors read the writing on the wall? If the script was never changed, if everybody always knew of Ksavah Shuri, then what was so strange about it? And the answer is, So the Gemara gives a few answers. It was written for them in Gematria. Now, Gematria, we usually think of meaning the numerical values of the words, but Gematria more generally can mean any kind of transformations of letters. So in this case, Rav says it means it was written in Atbash. So each letter was replaced by the corresponding thing in Atbash. So as it said, Yatas, Yatas, Adach, Ugchamat. My parish, no, they couldn't understand what that meant, and therefore they were all scared. My parish lahu, so when Daniel comes, he explains to them that it stands for Mene Mene Tekelu Parasim. The Yud corresponds to the Mem, because Yud is the 10th letter, and Mem is the 10th letter from the end of the Aleph Beis. The Nun is the test is the 9th letter, and Nun is the 9th from the end, and so forth. That's how Atbash works. So he explains to them, Mene means Menor, as it says in the Pasuk, Mene, Menor, Lekom Achusach, V'Hashlam Aslach, or V'Hashlamach, Hashem has counted up, he says to Belshazzar, Hashem has counted up your kingship, and decided it's an end to it. We know Belshazzar had thought the 70 years of Golas Bavel are over, he took out the Kalim of the Bismikash and used them in his party, so now Daniel says, you know, you miscounted, Hashem instead has counted, and decided your kingdom is up, that's Mene. Why he says Mene twice, Mephoshim say, it means you counted and you thought Golas Bavel was over, but Hashem counted and said that your counting is wrong. To kill, the next word is to kill, where it means we weighed, means to kill to chasir. You've been weighed in the balance and you've been found wanting. You're lacking in the chosim that would save you. Parasin, or ufarasin, it says in the pasuk, and parasin means prisas malchusach, means Hashem is saying your kingdom is going to be divided up. But you hear us from modei uforas, and it's going to be given over to modei uporas. Which, in fact, that night they killed Belshazzar and took over the kingdom. He was the king of Babel. He was the king of Babel. He was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar.
Modei and Paras were not in Babel.
Modei and Paras are kingdoms near Babel. So Nebuchadnezzar had been Moshe Bakippa. He had ruled over the entire known world, including Paras and Modai. By this time, by Belshazzar's times, Paras and Modai are vassals of his, but they're semi-independent, and at this point they were working on conquering Babel, and that night they actually conquered Babel and killed Belshazzar and took over. So the point is, in other words, that, so again, according to the first two Manda Omos, the Belshazzar and company couldn't read it. It was written straight out, Mene Mene, to Caleb Parasin, but it was written in Ksav HaShuri, and they didn't know that script. Here, Rav is saying it was written in Ksav HaShuri, and they did know the script, but they're seeing these seemingly meaningless words, Yatas, Yatas, etc., and they couldn't figure it out. Ushmuel Omar, Shmuel says another way, yes, it was written in, yes, the letters they could read, but they couldn't read it because it was written, Mimters Ninkfi A'alaren. What the Malach did is he wrote it, instead of, you have there's 15 letters over here, Minei Minei Tekelu Parsin. Instead of writing it across, he wrote it downwards. So for example, the word Minei is written Mem, then underneath it the Nun, then underneath it the Aleph, then again Mem, Nun, Aleph, going from top to bottom, and so forth. So it comes out, written, if you read it across, it's three meaningless words, and therefore they couldn't understand it. So Malach writes that to me. Yeah, in fact, there are Mephoshim who explain. Now, if it was written, in a rectangle 3x5, somebody might have eventually figured it out. But the point is, some Mephoshim say that actually he wrote it in one straight line like that. Mimtas Ninkafi Alaren. So Daniel has to explain to them. You have to take the first letter of each. You have to take the first and fourth and seventh and so forth, and the second and fifth and eighth and so forth, and then you'll understand the message. Rabbi Yochanan says another way that it was disguised, anam anam lakat nisrafu. What the Malach did is he wrote each word backwards. So instead of Menei, in Mem Nun Aleph, it's Aleph Nun Mem. And the same thing with each of the other words, and therefore it was backwards and they couldn't understand. Rav Ashi Yomar, Nama Nama Katal Pursin. Rav Ashi says what the Malach did is he switched around the first two letters of each word. So yielding this, nama nama, katal purusin. Again, the point is that prevented people from understanding it. Ben Yehoyada says,
then you need Daniel
to come, yeah. Ben Yehoyada says, actually, the Malach may have written it in all four ways. The Malach may have written it one after the other in all these four ways, and therefore they really don't know what's going on over here.
Let me ask you, what would be the accomplishment that they broke Daniel into a picture for the Jewish people? Wouldn't that accomplish?
What accomplished? Daniel being in the king's palace, it means that he's able to, first of all, he's able to be an example of living as a Yid even in the palace and not assimilating. And he, in fact, we'll learn in Masechta Avodah Zarah later this year, Be'ez Hashem, that he made important gzeiros to prevent assimilation in his time. So yeah. But in this case, also, it means that he was greatly honored by Belshazzar, and afterwards he was very much honored by Daryavish and Kurdish as well, yeah. Okay, the Mishnah says, continuing with the halachas of a king, Ein Yoshvin al Susay, you're not allowed to ride on the king's horse, the Ein Yoshvin al Kisay, you're not allowed to sit on his throne, the Ein Mishkamshin b'shavitoy, and you're not allowed to use his royal scepter. The Ein Royan Osik from Stapir, you're not allowed to see the king when he's getting a haircut, the Loikru Orum, or when he's naked, the Loikru Beves HaMerchatz, or when he's in the bathhouse. Now, of course, people are naked in the bathhouse. Malachas Shloima on the Mishnah explains that in other words, even you would think in the bathhouse, everybody's naked. Maybe there's not a problem, but you're still not allowed to. Shenema, because the positive is Soyim Tosim Malach HaMelech, you should place upon yourselves a king, means the fear of the king, the respect of the king, always has to be on you, and if you don't, and if you see him under those conditions, then you won't have as much respect for him. One point Rashi mentions elsewhere is Soyim Tosim means place, you should place, means every time, if the king wants to forego his covered, for example, you have a responsibility to replace him as king over you, meaning to not allow him to forego his covered and to still have a constant respect for him.
This is redundant. You cannot see him when he's taking a haircut. You cannot see him naked.
No, because a haircut puts not naked when they get a haircut. Those are two different things.
Now, one he can do alone, one he can't.
The haircut, okay, you would say maybe the barber has to like keep him covered as much as possible and only uncover the parts of his head that he needs to shave. But the naked means exactly that. You know, words, people can't see him undressed. And then also not in the bathhouse, even though everybody there is undressed. So the Gemara gives an example. Now, we said in the Mishnah, you can't use his scepter. Now, that means not just the king's scepter, but other personal effects of his. So the Gemara is going to give an example of this involving Avishag HaShunamis. Now, the story is like this. The pasuk tells us at the beginning of Divrei Hayomim, there was a time late in David's life. He's very old. He's cold. He can't warm up. So his advisors say, let's get a girl for you, a Nara B'sula, and she'll lie together with you, and her body heat will warm you up. So they find a girl, Avishag HaShunamis, and she becomes David's personal attendant, and she does this service for him. Then the pasuk says afterwards, it describes how Adonai Yehu tried to make himself king, and eventually was foiled because Bathsheba found out, Nathan Anovi found out what's going on. He told Bathsheba, she and Nathan come to David and tell him, wait, Shlomo is supposed to be the king, and David gives immediate orders that Shlomo should be anointed as king. So Shlomo is king. Later on, the Pesukim describe, and it's still in Melachim Aleph, Perek Beis, Adoni Yohu comes to Bathsheba one day, and he asks her, can you ask Shlomo, I'd like to marry Avishag. And Bathsheba sees nothing wrong with it. After all, David hadn't married her before we learned that, and you're not allowed to marry a king's almana. But fine, she's not an almana. The pasuk says David never had relations with her. So therefore, Adoni Yohu figures she's fair game for him. She goes, so Bathsheba goes to ask Shlomo, and Shlomo realizes the implications of it. Fine, Avishag is not David's wife. However, she's like David's shayrit. She's like a scepter, like a personal attendant. So for Adoni Yohu to try to marry her is in effect like to try to usurp some part of the kingship. And so Shlomo realizes the danger, and it shows that Adoni Yohu still has ideas of getting the kingship for himself, and so Shlomo has him executed as a murder malchus. So the Gemara says, Omer of Yaakov, Omer of Yechon, and Avishag mutaris l'shloima v'asur l'adonia. As a matter of fact, there's halacha. Avishag would have been mutter to Shlomo if he had wanted to marry her, then he would have been able to, but she's also to Adonia. Mutaris l'shloima de melachoya. Shlomo is a king, a melach mishtamish, v'shavitya shal melach. A king can use a scepter that belonged to the previous king. Now, we learned at the beginning of the parak, a king can't marry an almona of another king. And in any case, if she had been married to David, then she would have been also to Shlomo because she was his father's wife. It would have, she'd been an heir, she'd be an heir to him. But like this, where Shlomo didn't have relations with her, Shlomo would have been perfectly entitled. But Adonia not. Vasura Adonia dehedya too. After all, Adonia, as much as he's a member of the royal family, he's still not the king. In halacha, there's no difference between a crown prince or any other prince or anybody else. They're all considered hedyotis. And then therefore, Adonia, she'd be off limits to Adonia.
Question?
Yes. What's the question?
Where did we see that Shlomo did take Avishag?
We don't. We're saying she could have if he wanted to. He would have been mutter to marry her had he wanted to. But when Adonia asks to marry her, it shows that it makes him a murder of Malchus. So Avishag Maihi, what's the story with Avishag? Dichtiv, Sefer Melachim begins, Ma'amelach David Zok and Baba Yom, David was old, King David was old, he had come into days, and the pasuk says that they tried to. He was old and cold, and he couldn't get warm by chasuv abgadim. They tried to cover him with clothes, and he wouldn't. The Gemara in Brachos mentions two reasons behind it. It's not just Sam that he was old, but anyway, the point is by Yom Rabbi Yivachshuvagim. So his servants suggest to him, let's find a girl and she can warm you up with her body heat. Uchtiv, and sure enough, the pasuk says by Yivachshuv Nara Yosefagim. They looked and they found a beautiful girl. Oh, they looked for a beautiful girl, and they found Avishag. Uchtiv, and the pasuk says, "Vanara yofad ma'od." The girl was very beautiful. Vatila malach seich penes. He was a warmer for the king. Seichin comes from a shodesh and loshen kodesh, that means to warm up. Vata shodesh sehu, and she served him. So the Gemara picks up the story from there. Omra, she says to David, "Ninsavan, why don't you marry me?" Now, Rashi explains on the pasuk Pshuta Shal Mikra as David didn't, because as a besula she would have more body heat. But the Gemara doesn't seem to be accepting that. The Gemara is assuming that she would have the same body heat either way. So marry me. Omra Lara Siddhasli. She says, you're also to me. I already have 18 wives. And as we learned before, that's the maximum for a king. Omra Le, she says, you're fafruming zir. Chastri Laganva, when a thief. And it's like they say, when a thief has no ability to steal, nafshi nokit b'shloma, then he put nafshi l'shloma nokit, then he pretends like he's a peaceful guy. So in other words, she's saying it's not because you have too many wives. It's because you're old and you don't have gvura sanoshim anymore. You don't have the ability to, and therefore you're fafruming zich and pretending like it's because you can't lahalocha. But we know that it's not that. How does he speak with such chutzpah to David HaMelech? We'll get back to that point in a second. Omelahu, so David says, you know what, I'll show you that's wrong. As the pasuk says, Tiru li l'Bathsheba, call Bathsheba to me. Uchtiv, batove Bathsheba al-Melech HaChadra. The pasuk says, Bathsheba came to the king's chamber. Now, the context of the pasuk is, again, where Adoniyo is trying to set himself up as king, and Bathsheba comes to David to inform him what's going on, and to remind him that he had promised that Shlomo, her son, is going to be king. But the Gemara is understanding that also she came, that David had summoned her for the purpose of having relations with her. And Omer of Yehuda Omer Ab, Ba'oisashah, Kincha Bathsheba, B'shloishas Yemapas. Afterwards, Bathsheba had to wipe herself with 13 cloths, in other words, that David still had, very much had, Vuras Anoshim, and is able to have relations with her, so much that it took her all that to clean herself up with. So in other words, he showed that Avishag is wrong, and he still has that power, and the fact that he's not marrying Avishag is in fact because he's also two in halacha. Where do we get 13? Rashi says the pasuk that describes Vasheva coming has 13 words in it. Vatovoi Vasheva el Hamelach Achadra, Vahamelach Zokin Ma'od, Vahavisha Gashunamis Mesharas Es Hamelach. Now, if you count it, it's 14 words. A number of Mephoshim say, you see from this, that Vasheva is supposed to be written as one word. La locha. We don't do that, but nevertheless, there is that idea. Okay. Now, what does Vasheva, what does Avishag mean by this, talking with such chutzpah to the king? So the Aruch HaNeir gives an interesting idea about it. He says that, David many years ago had stumbled in the matter of Bathsheba and married her when he wasn't supposed to yet, before he had the whole thing with Uriah and her and everything. So now, for the rest of his life, David is doing tshuva for it. One form of tshuva, the highest form of tshuva, is when a person is in the exact same situation and he doesn't do the Aveda. Now, a regular person should not try to put himself in such a situation. You never know, he might succumb. But David was on a high enough level that he could actually try that. So he's, over the years, he's doing that. He's making sure that he has lots of opportunities to be over on his surim involving wives, involving women, and he doesn't. So now, and this is why, so now he has why, the Aruch HaNeir says, why after all does Avishag have to be beautiful? To warm him up, she could just as well be a plain-looking girl. The verdict is, this is all part of David's tshuva. But now Avishag is telling him, listen, you're old anyway. You don't have that koyach anymore anyhow. So what good does it do you? This tshuva is not accomplishing. This method you're using anymore is not accomplishing anything as far as a method of tshuva. So David shows to her, no, you're wrong. I still have very much the power, the ability to, and the fact that I'm not marrying you is all part of my tshuva to be mechaper, to do tshuva for what I did with Bathsheba all those years ago. Ben Yehoyada adds also that's why she uses the metaphor of a ganav. She's saying you're trying to sneak something past the Yetzer Hara, but it doesn't really work when you don't have the koyach. And David shows her, yes, I very much have the koyach, and it's just the reason I'm not doing it is because of the issur. We talked about yesterday, by the way, there's a machlokas of the Rambam and the Ravid, whether when we say a king has a maximum of 18 wives, does it mean that 18 includes wives and pilagshim, or is he allowed 18 wives and they can have as many pilagshim as he wants? Now, all Gemara seems to be a proof for the Rambam, because otherwise, why doesn't he take her as a Pilagish? Mephoshim say that a counter-argument to that could be Avishag didn't want to be a Pilagish. She wants to be a full wife or nothing. And then, therefore, he can't, because he already has 18 wives. So the Gemara continues, Omer of Shaman Ba'aba, Boyer E Kamakosh and Gerushin. Come and see how hard it is to divorce. We see that David was given a special heter to be in Yichud. Now, we learned yesterday, after the whole story of Amnon and Tamar, the Beis Din of that time, David's Beis Din, had made a gzera about Yichud Pnuya. Never relent, never again is a Jewish man allowed to be alone with a Jewish woman, even if they're not married, even if she's not married, and even though there's no Issur Erva involved. But here, David has Avishag privately with him, even in his bed, and they allowed it, but they didn't allow him to divorce one of his 18 wives in order to be able to marry Avishag. So we see how hard divorce is. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Elazar says in this connection, Kol HaMagarish as Ishter Rishona, a man divorces his first wife after the Mizbeach murdered all of Demois. Even the Mizbeach sheds tears for him. Shenema, as we find a pasuk, Vizois Shenis Tasu, the Navi Malachi says to the Jewish people, this is the second thing that you're doing wrong. The first one was that they're degrading the Mizbeach by bringing on an unsuitable korbanos. And then he says, here's another thing that you're doing. Actually, he mentions also there was a problem with intermarriage over there. And then a second thing you're doing, Kasois Dimas Mizbach Hashem, you're covering the Mizbeach of Hashem with tears, Bechiva Anoka, with crying and with moaning, Me'ein Oid Pnei Salam Mincha, to the point where Hashem doesn't want to turn anymore and accept your mincha, v'lakachas rotzin miyedchem, or to accept any favorable korbanos from you. Uchtiv, and the next pasuk continues, v'amartem alma, you're saying why, what are we doing wrong? And the reason is, al ki Hashem heid beincha uvein eishes nurecha, Hashem is testifying about what's going on between you and the wife of your youth. Asherata b'gad taba, where you've been disloyal to her and you've divorced her. V'hi chadertecha v'eshes v'risecha, and she's supposed to be your companion and the wife of your covenant. In other words, and you just divorced her without a good reason. There was a whole thing at that time. The Medrash explains that when the Jewish people came to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Beis Hamikdash, the women they brought their wives with them, but many of the women, because of the troubles of the journey and afterwards, with the troubles of resettling Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael, they lost their good looks. So some of the Jewish men then were going and being attracted to the local Goyish of women, to the local Goyish of women and marrying them. Some of them were going and divorcing the Jewish wives, and the women are coming to the Mizbeach over there and crying and saying, what do we do wrong that we deserve to be, that we should deserve to be treated that way by our husbands? So Hashem is standing up for them and saying, yes, you husbands are acting very wrongly in this, first of all, in intermarrying with Goyish, and second of all, in treating your Jewish wife, your first wife, in such a way. So we see that the Mizbeach itself cries for such a thing. What's the idea? Marashal says, because this way, as long as a woman is married, she's going to be bringing korbanos on the Mizbeach every so often. When she gives birth, for example, there's going to be korbanos brought on the Mizbeach. Now, when she's divorced, then she's not going to, and therefore, like the Mizbeach is crying because, so to speak, it has less on it. They have a comment in a sikha, actually, that's not really a full answer. After all, there's such a thing as kayitz on Mizbeach. They have korbanos that are dafka being brought on the Mizbeach when there's no other korbanos being brought. So it's not like the Mizbeach is ever empty. So rather, the Rebbe gives a whole explanation that the Mizbeach itself represents the reconciliation between the Jewish people and Hashem. Even we do Avedas, the Mizbeach is Mechaper, and Mezin, and Mechabev, and so forth. And therefore, divorce represents, goes against the whole Mitzvah of what the Mizbeach is about, and therefore the Mizbeach cries for it. The Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'tamer Rabbi Elazar, ein ishtet shel adam meisa, elem kin mevakshim men mamon ve'ein loy. A man's wife dies only if he's being demanded money of him, like for to pay off a neder that he made, and he doesn't pay off the neder. Shenema, as the pasuk says, you shouldn't make a neder, and im ein l'chol shalom, if you don't have what to pay, lama yikach mishkov chamitachtecha, why should Hashem take away your lying one from under you, meaning your wife with whom you lie? So in other words, the point is, when a person pledged for tzedakah, for example, or for a neder for tzedakah, and he doesn't pay it off, then Hashem may punish him by taking away his wife. And the Gemara continues, when a man's first wife dies, it's as if the Beis Hamikdash had been destroyed in his times. Shenema, we find in Yechezkel, Hashem tells him, Ben Adam, which is Hashem's nickname for Yechezkel throughout the Sefer, behold, I'm going to take away the beloved one of your eyes, your wife, whom Yechezkel loved very much. I'm going to take her away from you in a plague. Lois Sifka, and Hashem tells him, you're not going to mourn for her. Lois Sifka, you're not going to cry. Lois Sava Dimasecha, you shouldn't even shed tears. The point is, the pasuk goes on to say, that when people are going to ask him, why not, he's going to explain that. The Gemara is going to quote the pasuk over here. He's going to tell them, this is a simon for, this is going to be an example for you of how it's going to be when the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed. It's going to be an enormous tragedy, but nobody is going to be mourning and crying, because what's the point of mourning when a person's relative has passed away, or we had a disaster or whatever? For one thing, is that other people should commiserate with him. Well, at the time of the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, everybody is going to be in the same sorrow. So there's no sense praving avelos for it when everybody feels the same way. So he says, Hashem tells him, you're going to publicly not prava avelos for your wife, and everybody will take a lesson from you of how it's going to be, and maybe they'll do tshuva, and therefore there won't have to be a korban. The pasuk continues, Vadaber al Amba Boiker, Yechezkel says, I spoke to the people in the morning, told them what's going to happen. But Thomas Ishti Ba'arev, sure enough, my wife passed away that evening. Uchtiv, and then he wasn't praving Avelus, and everybody's wondering why, and he tells them, Hidni Mechalas Mikdoshi, behold, I'm going to desecrate my Beis Hamikdash. Go'in Uzchem, the pride of your strength, Machmar Anechem, the beloved thing of your eyes. So we see that the first wife of Yechezkel, when she dies, is compared to the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. The Gemara continues, Amar Blachan, we call Amar Shemesa Ishti Biyamav, any man whose wife dies during his lifetime, Olam Choshach Bader, the world is dark for him. Chenema, as the pasuk says, Choshach Ba'olai, the light is dark in his tent, and Olai means his wife, as we find in various places. So Olai Bishvil Ishti, Rashi says, En Olai El Ishti. So Ore Choshach, his light is dark, Ba'olai, because of his wife. The Nera, all of Yiddach, and his candles sputtering out when he's there. So in other words, we see that he loses a certain light when his wife is gone. Rabbi Yosef Achanina Amar Psi Yosef Mitzkatzris. Rabbi Yosef Achanina says, in addition, also his steps become shorter. He's not able to walk as strongly as before because he's so weak and feeling such tsar now. Shenemar, as the next pasuk continues, the next pasuk continues, Yetsu Tzade Oinoi, the steps of his strength are going to be narrow, which means, in other words, so like this, before he was able to take wide steps, because he's strong, now he feels weaker. Rabbi Bohu, Rabbi Bohu says also his counsel, his advice falls away. In other words, he's not able to accomplish the things that he planned. Shenema, because the same passage continues, his etzah, his counsel, his advice is throws him away. In other words, like he comes up with ideas, but he can't actually bring them into fruition because he doesn't have his wife anymore. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Abachona, Amar Birchanan, Koshal Zavdom Kriyas Yamsuf. To begin with, making a shidduch, to bring together a man, a particular man and woman, is as difficult, so to speak, as Kriyas Yamsuf. Shenema, as a part, it's a greater nest, in other words, as Kriyas Yamsuf. Shenema, the Kim Moshe Vichidim Baisa, the Pasuk says Hashem brings, Hashem settles individuals into a household. Motzi Asidim Bakoshores, Hashem brings out the prisoners in Koshores. One thing Koshores, and the simple meaning of kosharis means something like chains, but it also means, the Gemara elsewhere explains, that it means in a suitable season. Hashem brought the Jewish people out in the springtime, which is a comfortable season to travel. So first of all, tikun motzi asirim, alok motzi asirim. So don't read, Hashem brings out the prisoners, but like the bringing the yechidim into a household is kim motzi asirim, is like when Hashem brings out the prisoners, yitzias mitzrayim, tikun b'kosharis, ala b'chi v'shiris. And the word b'kosharis, we darshan, is b'chi v'shiris, crying and singing, which is referring to Kriyas Yamsuf, where the Jewish people were, where there were cries, and there was also singing, because they sang the Shira, but there were cries before that about what's going to happen, that we're afraid of the Mitzrayim and whatever. So therefore we see that there's a comparison between Moshe Yechidim Baisa and the whole events of Yitzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf. So the Gemara says, Eini, is that so? So you're telling me it's so hard to pair up a man and woman? 40 days before a child is formed, meaning when the child is first conceived, because it takes 40 days for the embryo to form to the point where it's considered a baby in halacha, Basko Yotzes Vaymeres, Basko comes out and announces, Bas Pliny, the Pliny, the daughter of Pliny is going to marry Pliny. So we see that it's already Basher, before they were even born, when they were first conceived. By the way, why the expression Bas Pliny is a cute idea about it? Because generally, your wife is usually younger than her, Kala is usually younger than her Chosin. So when the Chosin is conceived, the wife has usually not even conceived yet, so therefore all you can say is Bas Pliny. Anyway, so you see that it's Bashert long before, and the answer is like Kasha, Hob Zivug Lushin, Hob Zivug Sheni. There's a difference between a first marriage and a second marriage. The first one is Bashert before they're born. The second one Hashem has to decide based on their Meisim, as it says at the beginning of Sota, and that's Koshik Kriyas Yamsuf. There's a lot of discussion about that, including that Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni doesn't necessarily mean a person's actual first marriage and second marriage. Sometimes it can be, in other words, that the Zakeret person has their Basherta, and they're not Zoichat to find them first, so therefore, like Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni would mean the first choice, the one that was Basheret for him, versus the second, like the backup choice, the one that he ends up marrying. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that a person might miss out on marrying his Basherta. And there's a lot of can refer to matters involving Gilgulim, and there's a lot of other details within that. Continuing on the topic of a first wife and how important it is, the Gemara says, "Amar of Shmuel Bar Nachman, La Koyesh Tmura Chutz Me'Eshes Ne'urim. Anything in life has a substitute except for a wife of one's youth. There's no substitute for that if she passes away. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Ve'Eshes Ne'urim Kisi Mois." A wife of youth, how could she be rejected? So in other words, Hashem is saying to the Jewish people that, listen, even a person rejects, a person doesn't like his first wife, but nevertheless, even if he wants to be away from her for a while, he still reconciles with her eventually, the same way Hashem is saying that, because there's no substitute for her, the same way I will never substitute you with another nation. The Gemara continues, Masne, that Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yitzchak Brei, Rabbi Yehuda taught his son Rabbi Yitzchak a similar idea. Einon amotze kodas ruach elam ishter rishoina. A man really finds full satisfaction only with his first wife. Again, she's his basherta, she's half of his neshama, etc. Tosfos, by the way, points out when we're saying aboyim yom kodem yitzias havlad, nevertheless, you can still have that tefillah, for example, can change the matter, and we're saying over here that in halacha, for example, you're allowed to get engaged on any day of the year, even Tisha B'Av, because Shema Yikad Menuach. So we see that even though it was Basherta, nevertheless, tefillah can still change it. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying a man finds real satisfaction only with his first wife. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yehi Mekor Chaboruch, may your wellspring be blessed, Usmach Me'eshes Nurecha, and be happy with the wife of your youth. Omer Lo, so Rabbi Yitzchak, the son asks, Goin Man, where is an example of that? Amalai, and Rabbi Yehuda tells him, Kven Imcha, for example, your mother. I'm very satisfied with her. She's my first wife, and that's an example of that. So the Gemara says, Eini, is that so? V'ham makri le Rabbi Yehuda, le Rabbi Yitzchak Brei. The same Rabbi Yehuda teaches his son, Rabbi Yitzchak, when the Pasuk says in Kehelas, U'moitzani marmi mavas se'isha, ashehi metzodim v'charamim, I find more bitter than death a wife who is whose snares and traps. V'omalei kagoin man, and Rabbi Yitzchak asks him, where is an example? V'omalei kagoin imcha, and Rabbi Yehuda says, like your mother, so we see he didn't get along with her so well. And the answer is, She was very harsh. She would get angry very easily. But she was more willing to be mavra amidosav and noyach lutzis. She's more easy to calm down and to feel better afterwards. So yes, it could be very hard when there's an argument between them because she's very easy. She's very short tempered, but afterwards she was also very easy to appease. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, on balance, then he has nachas ruach and he has kodas ruach with her. How is this not Lashon Hara? So there's a few possibilities in it, but one very, very interesting explanation, I think from Ben Yehoyada, is actually that what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is, she has a natural tendency, she has a natural disposition to be very short-tempered, but she's worked on it over the years to calm herself down and not to become angry so easily. So therefore Rabbi Yehuda is saying, the way she was originally, yes, Motzani Mami Mavas, but the way she's worked on herself over the years, it's a shvach for her, or smach me'eshes ne'uracha, look how hard she's worked to transform her midas, and therefore now I have kodas ruach with her. And there's a famous verse that's brought from the Balei Amos, I think from maybe Stirl Salanter, that says it's easier to learn the entire shas than to transform one midah, and one of one's own midas, and we see, therefore, according to that, then Rabbi Yehuda is saying that she was able to accomplish that.
I don't understand what it means to transform even the... Kass to what?
It means, in other words, that she trained. She trained herself. She trained herself to not be a balas kass. In other words,
it was
originally, but then
just that she was easy.
So that's according to the simple explanation of the Gemara. That's what it means. She retained her midah of kass. She was easy to appease as well. Like you have in Pirkei Avos, noyach lichos, but not. Right. Which you haven't hit there. One second. Right. Hold on. There's two different explanations over here. The straightforward explanation is that she continued to have that midah of kass. She just also had the midah of being noyach lutzis. Where we have, after all, in Pirkei Avos, you know, you have arba midas. You have arba midas v'deis. Noyach lutzis. When noyach lutzis, the Alter Rebbe's gear says, yotzeh seder v'schore. You do lose out, but you gain more from the fact because you're easily appeased. So in that case, then that's her mila. The other explanation, as I said, I think from Ben Yehoyada, is that no, it means she actually transformed herself to not be a balas kass altogether. So not that she still gets angry, but she's easily appeased, but rather that she worked on that midah over the years and now made herself. Okay, the Gemara continues. Omnav shmova unya meshmei derav isha goylam hi. A woman is like an unformed vessel before she's married. Ve'ena kereses brist ela lamisha asar kli. She makes a covenant, like she has a certain special emotional attachment, only to the one who made her a keli. In other words, when she first has relations and breaks her besulim, then at that point she becomes a keli suitable to have children. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ki vayalayach oisayich, the one who is vayalayach, meloshen val, who so to speak, your husband had relations with you, is the one who made you. Hashem tzvakas shema, his name is Hashem tzvakas. So we can see that the husband, so to speak, makes the wife and finishes her into a keli. And she has a special krisas pris, a special emotional attachment to him. The Tana, we learn in a brayse, ein ish meis el ishto, ben isha meis el baila. A man truly dies only to his wife, meaning of all the people who are sad and who lose out when he passes away, his wife feels it most of all. Ben isha meis el baila, and when a wife passes away, it's her husband who feels it the most. Ein ish mes el ishto, shenema vayomas elimelech ish nami. The pasuk says in Rus, elimelech, the husband of Nami died. Now we know that elimelech is the husband of Nami, so. The point is that she was the most affected by it. Then Isha Mesa Elo Baila, Shenema, as you have in this week's parasha. Yaakov says, Vani Bavoyi mi Padan, when I was coming from Padan, Mesa Olai Rachel, Rachel died on me. In other words, on me, it was on me. It hit me harder than anybody else.
He had other wives,
but nevertheless, she was still, and she wasn't even Ashes Ne'urim, because he didn't marry her first, he married Leah first. Nevertheless, we're saying that her death hit him harder than it does anybody else. And remember, he's talking to Yosef. Yosef is her son. You know, so Yosef lost his mother at age 9 years old, and nevertheless, Yaakov is telling him it still had a greater effect on me even than it did on you. Mausha says we are primarily talking about a first wife. And as far as Yaakov and Rachel, he says, listen, it's true, he actually ended up marrying Leah first, but after all, she was Ikrei Shabayis, she was his main wife, he worked for Laban to begin with only for her hand, so therefore, in that sense, she can still be considered Ishi Rishayna.
And besides, she stole Leah's thunder because she got married after Shavuot.
Well, fine, but that was that. Okay, whatever, yeah. Okay. Fine. I guess we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem. It's getting late.